and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Chavez, and welcome to the other side of the news. This week, I am the guest host for the other side of the news, Bob Fitrakis. Dr. Bob, he's taken a couple weeks off, and was selected to be the first guest host, which is great. I'm honored. And today, I have a special guest and a great friend of mine. His name is Jay Womke. He's the owner of Blue Rock Station. Up in Philo, Ohio, up in southeast Ohio at the foothills of the Appalachians, I guess you could say.
That's right. The West Virginia part of Ohio.
The West Virginia part of Ohio. Correct. And let's see, Blue Rock Station, as far as I've known you folks for about 15 years. How long has Blue Rock Station been open right now?
Well, that kind of depends on how you define open, but we started building the airship, and I guess the feature item of Blue Rock Station, it's the first airship built east of the Mississippi. And yes. So we started that in 1993. We didn't really intend on being open per se, but then people just started showing up. And they'd say, aren't you guys the ones building the house out of tars? And we'd say, yeah. So then they wanted to look around. And so that became sort of the first introduction of people coming to Blue Rock Station. It was originally just envisioned as our home. And then 2003 or so, we came back from Europe. We had quit our jobs, decided to kind of, I don't know, live the good life in southeastern Ohio. And so we thought, well, if people want to pay us money to come see our place, why don't we take it? So so that really was 2003. We started opening up to the public. We've probably had close to 40,000 people come through over the years doing workshops, sustainable living. And now what we focus on mostly is solar PV. Annie has some goats and does, you know, cheese making and things like that. But with the wonderful world of COVID, everything is pretty much online like we are right now. Right?
Yeah, you had to do a huge transformation because you actually had classes in classrooms for photovoltaic. And then when the shutdown happened because of social distancing, then you converted to online classes, which is great. We'll be talking about that in a second. Let's talk a little bit about Blue Rock Station. I remember one of the first things that Annie marketed it in, which she sold, was llama poop.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. It says, I can't believe she's selling this. And I bought some, by the way, and I used it on my plants, and it was great. And I think it was real successful, too. But then you moved on to publications of different things you do, like pounded, how to make a pounded tire foundation, how to build a greenhouse and straw bale construction, a greenhouse out of plastic bottles, which I sure. saw that greenhouse survive Hurricane Ike when it came through right. Blue Rock Station, where I saw downtown Columbus, a lot of things got torn apart, but that plastic bottle greenhouse survived, which was just amazing. What great construction that was. So tell me, Jay, you are self-publishers, right? You do your own self-publication?
Yeah. So we are, we had decided early on that we would take whatever intellectual properties we had. You know, if we're building a tire wall, why don't we document it, see if we can't somehow market that? So we did get into the publications, and really in the early days, it was all go down to Staples, print these things out, fold them up, staple them, mail them out. Then we got into some electronic documentations where people really literally from around the world were contacting us and saying, you know, I want to build a plastic bottle greenhouse, for example. And we had schools in Nigeria and in, you know, all over. So we could send them a PDF. So that was great. So then we're mm-hmm. this hillbilly little place out in southeastern Ohio marketing to the world. And now we've sort of evolved over time. So for instance, our solar textbooks are used really in colleges around the world. And because the technology has changed so much, we can submit our document to the publishing house. And if I get an order in Australia, it can be printed in Australia and distributed from their Australian office, you know, one copy, two copies, 100 copies. It really doesn't matter.
And so it's publication upon demand, right?
Yeah. And then our other books are in the same, they have a virtual warehouse through the publication. So they work with a network of 3,000 different bookstores. So if you went online with one of these bookstores, you would look at their online catalog. They don't physically have those books there. They just simply take your order, submit it to our publisher. The publisher prints it, distributes it to the customer, and then we get a check for the sale of that book. So to me, it's amazing. It's amazing how that...
It's evolved,
how that industry has just changed dramatically. So you don't need textbook publishers anymore. You don't need salesmen anymore. You don't need any of these things. So I think we've seen that whole industry just completely be revolutionized really in the last 10 years. It's astounding.
Yeah. Thanks for letting people know that, because there are people that need to self-publish or would like to self-publish, writers and others. But another thing too is on the website, you have all these publications. How many do you think you have? How many books or pamphlets or writings that you have there?
We probably have about a dozen that are actively being sold. You know, sometimes we've come out with things that don't work so well, you know, and they fade away, or there's a brief period of time when people are interested in it and then it goes away. I mean, one of my favorite is When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine. That's a book I wrote, almost 10 years ago now. And that's a fun one. I like that one. It's the past history, present and future predictions of energy in a very accessible way.
I want to talk to you about that a little bit more later on in this broadcast. Also you have a podcast archive, correct?
The phoners are already calling in asking about it, right? my wife Annie and I started a couple of years ago now, doing a weekly radio show. And actually it's funny, because what we thought was our initial motivation is our granddaughter is starting to get older. And we thought, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't you have loved to have your grandparents just talking about stuff that they found interesting and have that available 30 years, 50 years, 100 years off into the future? And that was sort of the initial motivation. But then people have always asked us about what we're doing here and about sustainability. And we started then working with WOUB in Athens, the public radio station there. They would provide a studio time and recording. We work then through WGRN, where you're involved, and it's aired there. Then the program is syndicated through the Pacifica Network. So it's available through that. And then it's also available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's called When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine. And what we're trying to do is just deal with sustainability issues, but in an accessible way, you know, without being, I mean, everybody around sustainability that seems they're either a prepper or a judgmental, you know, politically correct, annoying individual. So we're trying to be somewhere outside of that and say, look, sustainability is cool. It's a great thing. And it usually revolves around community and social interaction. You know, that's true sustainability. It's not about, you know, how do you meet all of your needs by yourself, you know, as a prepper, where I'm going to, you know, dig a bunker and sit there while the nuclear winter somehow rages above. And it's also not sitting there and judging other people, saying, look at the car you're driving, you're not as cool as I am. Look at the house you live in, you're not as woke as I am, or whatever. I mean, it's mostly just, how do we try and tread a little bit more lightly on this planet, understanding we're all people and we like our comfy pillows. You know?
You cover a lot of subjects in your podcast. I've looked at the archive and it's amazing. I've listened to a lot of it too. One other aspect of the website, which is probably the newest feature, is your photovoltaic classes that you're giving right now. They're workshops, certification, basically,
right,
through the ETA. And ETA stands for the
Electronic Technicians Association International.
Electronic Technicians, yes, Association International. And you're on the board there, right?
Yeah, I've been on the board there for probably, about 8 years now, somewhere around there, for a good long while. I'm the chairman of their sustainability council, so to speak, and as a board member. And before I got involved with ETA, I was on the board of directors of Green Energy Ohio for a number of years. So yeah, I got some street cred, you know.
Yeah, well, in the material world, you also have street cred. Not saying that you're not in the material world, but in your past life, you had worked with a certification company. Am I correct?
Yeah, I was the executive director of a large telecom association. So, before we decided to quit the corporate world and hung out in Europe for a couple of years and then lived in a house made out of trash here in southeastern Ohio. I was executive director of an organization called BICSI, which is a telecom association. We had about 26,000 members around the world, about 100 employees, offices.
International.
Yeah, yes. We had offices. Not only were based in Tampa, but we had offices in England, in Mexico, in Brazil, in Korea, in Japan, and in Australia.
Yeah. So, your cred is your credentials are great, but I want to prove that you're cool. So,
All right, that's good. Prove it to me too.
Yeah. Okay. You managed a comic book company, right?
Right. Yeah. Before, I wish I had a career. I wish I had a career where the skills from one job could transfer to the next job. You know?
What was the name of the comic book company?
It was a company called Diamond Comic Distributors. If people are into comics, they certainly know Diamond.
Yes, I've heard of Diamond.
Yeah, I was with Diamond back. I joined there, in the early 1980s. I was there until the late 1980s. And I ended up leaving when I was the general manager of Diamond, worked for a fella, Steve Jeppy, who was the owner of Diamond. And Steve's a great guy, probably the most influential person in the comic book industry today. Since that time, Diamond has become the exclusive distributor of comic books. So pretty much everything flows through Diamond.
Yeah, you were very involved with them, too, as far as their success, too.
Yeah, well it was fun. It was early days. Yeah. Well, I always think about, Steve and I sharing a Motel 6 room because we were too cheap to get two rooms, you know. And I think his world has changed quite a lot. He now is one of the owners of the Baltimore Orioles. And
My God. Oh, man, that is amazing.
Made a ton of money. Let me just say that did not translate to me.
No royalty checks rolling in, huh?
No.
Well, that's great. Jay, you've really transferred a lot of those skills to Blue Rock Station. There has been some residual effect, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go into the second part of this program, but first I'd like to give a station ID. You are listening to 94.1 WGRN LP in Columbus, Ohio. I'm speaking with Jay Warmke of BlueRockStation.com, and we're discussing Blue Rock Station itself, everything that entails, and what I really want to do is hit on your book, When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, which is being offered free in a download version from the website BlueRockStation.com. And so I ask all our listeners, hey, grab the book because it's a great book. And Jay, tell me what this book is all about. I'd like to hear from the horse's mouth. First off, how many editions have you had in that book?
Oh, that particular book, really just the one. I mean, it was published in 2012, and it's kind of an evergreen kind of thing. I think you're thinking about our Understanding Photovoltaics, which is a college textbook on solar.
Yes, I forgot to mention that.
Eighth edition. Yeah,
that's a textbook in the online courses. And how many editions have you had of that book?
It's in its eighth edition. And that textbook is used in community colleges, trade schools all over the world, and integrated into our online program, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But I do want to touch a little bit on When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, because that's more of a fun book. You know, if you don't think you want to be too wonky with solar, you know, really what this did is it took energy from the very beginning. I had to sort of pick a date. So I said, you know, 1492, you know, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And what we do is we take each era from 1492 to today, and we say, okay, what was the population of the world? What was the major energy source? And what were the events that shaped that era around energy? And it's really fascinating because as a species, we seem to identify an energy source, use it till it runs out, face traumatic global disruption, and then come up with a new energy source. And then we use that until it runs out, you know, and sometimes these sources take a little longer than others. So we've gone through peak charcoal, peak wood, peak coal, peak oil, peak natural gas. You know, we've used these things. Now we're into the age of renewables, but I tried to.
So you would contest that natural gas has hit a peak already?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, when I was writing this book in 2012, there was a discussion whether the industry was at an end. You know, was it already at its beyond its sell-by date. And basically what they did is they industrialized the process through fracking. And fracking is a technology, they call it an enhanced extraction technique, but it's really, I call it a technology of desperation. When an industry is coming to its end of life, you industrialize it in some way that gets you a couple more years of life out of the industry. So basically they're blowing up underground and they're able to extract gas. Mountaintop removal is the peak technology or the technology of desperation for coal. You know, well, it's no longer economical to mine it the way we have been. So let's blow up mountains and pick up the bits.
Just scrape off the whole mountain. Right.
Yeah, it's efficient, but it's not so good on the mountain. Well, you know, and all it does, every one of these enhanced extraction techniques only extends the life of the industry about 18 months. That's all it does. So yep. Natural gas, we've extended that business a few months, but it's doomed. I mean, it's a doomed industry.
One time I was in Texas, I heard a oil man tell me that they were fracking oil wells.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fracking oil and gas, I mean, it's all the same stuff. It's all in the same place. Mm-hmm. What you do is you drill a hole, and you go down and you exert high pressure. Basically, you explode the rocks beneath the surface, creating voids in which the natural gas that's in this shale will permeate out and you can extract it. Well, this is a technique that's been known since, you know, more than 100 years ago. They just decided it wasn't economical to try and extract that gas out of the shale. They developed some new technologies, and during the Bush administration, they exempted these technologies from environmental protection, so they didn't have to worry about the mess they were causing, and boom, an industry is there. But
right. Yeah, that was a major goal of former Vice President Dick Cheney from out of the administration.
Because actually, the technology for fracking was patented by Halliburton, who Dick Cheney worked for as their CEO. So it was a sweetheart deal. In fact, they refer to it as the Halliburton exemption, where they exempted essentially his former company. It's sort of like you think Lily Tomlin had a great line saying, no matter how cynical I get, it's never enough. You know, this is kind of, that's the way our politics work. So fortunately, they're doomed. It's a doomed technology.
Okay, so we're looking at dinosaur technology, really, the residual of dinosaur bodies, really, from that era. And so we're moving into the future. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, and all this is outlined in your book, When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine. Turbine or turban, whatever it is. Turban makes me think of a hat. I don't know.
you say turban, I say turbine, but Fox News says windmill. So windmill. I mean, I don't, you know, and a windmill grinds grain. I don't know what they're talking about when they say windmills, but you know.
So we're moving into the 21st century of energy. So right. Where's the book go on that?
Well, it's really exciting, actually. I mean, we're so used to gloom and doom, you know, in the world saying we're heading towards global warming, we're heading towards, you know, fuels being scarce and expensive. But with renewables, the trajectory really for solar, particularly wind a little less so, is more like microchips in the computer world. The more you install, the cheaper it gets. We're used to fossil fuels that are a diminishing commodity. So the more you use, the more expensive and the harder it is to extract. But with solar, right. The more we develop it, the cheaper it is and the easier it is to extract. And to give you an example of the amount of potential of solar, all of the fossil fuels that have ever existed on planet Earth from the dawn of time to today represent the energy equivalent of 3 days of sunlight hitting planet Earth. So from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution to today, we have had 150 years of unparalleled growth and economic activity by harvesting and monetizing a day and a half of sunlight. So imagine what will happen economically when we begin to monetize actual sunlight. I mean, it's an age that we just simply cannot even imagine. And just like computer power went from very expensive to essentially free, we think of bandwidth as essentially free. Energy will go from very expensive to essentially free. So how will our world develop when the cost of energy per se is zero? And that's where we're moving, which doesn't mean you're not going to pay for things. It just means that instead, like your telephone, you know, it used to be $25 a month and you had a landline and you were paying for the broadband. Today it's $250 and the broadband is free. Well, you're paying for all of the services that are associated with that phone, the data, the streaming of video. So it has become a service as opposed to a commodity. And energy will move in that same direction, where instead of paying for kilowatt hours from your electric or gallons of gasoline for your car, you will be paying for energy services that will be developed that we don't even have a concept of what these things are yet, but you will feel you cannot live without them. So wow. You will pay for these services.
That's great. You know, one more question. Going off of energy, there's, of course, energy efficiency. What direction can we go on that?
Well, energy efficiency has always been the low-hanging fruit. You know, you get like a $4 return for every dollar spent on energy efficiency. Really? One of the downsides, yeah, and one of the downsides I see in the fact that energy is becoming free is we're going to be less efficient. You know, if you're not paying for these, people get wasteful. So, yep. You know, as energy becomes free, what I like to say is, are we going to behave responsibly, or will we act like frat boys at an open bar? And history has shown we're probably going to be frat boys at an open bar.
Okay. Well, great. You know, that's we're running short time. I just want to once again thank you, Jay, for coming on the show, and urge all our listeners to go to bluerockstation.com, download When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine. It'll be a great history book and a look into the future, at least the future that we see. That's what we're looking for, a sustainable future. One more time with the photovoltaic class that we're going to be having, which is going to occur in April, from the week of April 5th to the week of May 10th, there's a 6-week course on basic residential photovoltaic certification class. And Jay and Annie of Blue Rock Station have been generous to offer a donation for each person that signs up. There's 10 positions in there available for the class. So also check that out on BlueRockStation.com. We'd really need your help as far as like using this donation to keep the radio station going and at 94.1 WGRN. And never forget BlueRockStation.com also. So check it all out. They're partners of ours and we really appreciate it. And Jay, I appreciate all the knowledge you got. There's so much more to talk about. And and because you definitely talk about it, all of it on your podcast that we hear on the radio station. So thanks so much for being on the other side of the news. My name is Tim Chavez. I'm the co-host, or not the co-host, the guest host for Bob Futrakis on the other side of the news. And thank you for listening to WGRN. And thank you, Jay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Futrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.